Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Joining me on the podcast today, Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer. You find him online at f4wonline.com. The last time I saw you, Dave, I got an opportunity to see you over in the Bay Area, and it was nice going out there for WrestleMania. You actually got an opportunity to go out there and go to the show, which is a rarity. How did you like covering WrestleMania from actually being there at the event?
It was a different perspective, because usually I watch WrestleMania is one that I vowed after I went in 1996 that I would never go to another live WrestleMania. And it's not because I didn't like it or anything like that. It's because, to me, the WrestleMania show is really the show that you watch on television. I mean, being there live, and I had a great time live, and it was a great show. But what I want, you know, what the whole thing was, and it was in my city. You know, I mean, if they're in Northern California, obviously I would go all the time, or even Southern California. But you know, what I wanted to avoid was having to watch it again. And so I'm there at the show, and I'm writing it up. And when it was over, it's like, I got to go home and watch it again. Because there's just so many hours, you know, it's a five-hour show.
Right.
And it's my hardest issue of the year, you know, because it's you know, it's not like the old days where it was just WrestleMania, which is a big show. It's not even just WWE. I mean, it's you know, all the WWE activities when you got Hall of Fame. Now there's going to be an NXT show every year. And then you've got, you know, all the other promotional stuff. I mean, there was so much stuff there. And I missed more than I saw, and I was running around constantly going from show to show for a couple of days, just with all the events. I mean, I wanted to see Mick Foley's show. I wanted to see a couple of the Evolve shows, and I did see one of them. You know, there were just so many different things I wanted to do that I didn't do, and that's with literally doing no work, just running from show to show and things like that. So it's a crazy week, and it's a fantastic weekend if you're a fan.
Yeah, and it's tough to get a gauge when you're at WrestleMania as a member of the media and you're up in the media box, especially when it's enclosed the way that it was. I mean, WWE set everybody up in the media very nicely, but at the same time, you're closed off from the rest of the audience. And then even the monitors and everything that we're watching, the sound is off by a couple of seconds. So it's really tough to get a gauge of what the crowd's into and what they're not, and be able to, you know, see the reactions from everything that's going on with the show.
Yeah, it was a tough perspective. I mean, it wasn't bad. But, yeah, I mean, like, if you watched on the monitors, you were a few seconds behind what was actually happening, and you were a few seconds behind the crowd. You weren't getting the full crowd because of the glass encasing. You weren't getting the full commentary because the commentary wasn't that loud. It was, you know, you could kind of hear it, but not really. I mean, I didn't realize how much I hated the commentary in the Sting Triple H match till I got home. I mean, when I watched it there, it was just kind of like, I kind of knew the storyline they were doing, and it wasn't my favorite, but people were telling me, like, and it's an interesting thing because, you know, the comments from people, like, live, it was, I mean, as an overall show, I'm not saying match quality, although match quality was very good, but as an overall show, I mean, it was one of the, you know, because of just the whole nature of the show and the tanks, you know, and the ring entrances and the, excuse me, the size of the building and all those people there. I mean, it was really one of the better shows that I've ever been to. And then people were just mad at me for saying that, but they're going to be mad anyway. But when I watched it on, you know, later, it was like, this was a really good show, but it probably wasn't the best WrestleMania, and I have seen better shows, but, I mean, still, it was a really good show.
Yeah.
I'm there, I'm in the building, and I didn't feel like I got the full perspective of the quality of the show, even being there, yeah.
Yeah, it's different when you're actually there and when you're at home, you know, watching. And you know what, too, you know, being out there in the Bay Area and having it there at Levi's Stadium. Now when it comes to WrestleMania, I know that WWE can be picky, and rightfully so, about where the show is going to be. I get this feeling that it's going to be a little bit more like the Super Bowl coming up here, from a standpoint of, we want only select cities. Maybe there's only going to be like 8 cities or something like that, where we have in a possible rotation, because the NFL is extremely picky about where they go and where they have the Super Bowl. The only time they've really had it in a cold weather place was just recently in New York, and obviously WWE's been there for Mania. And I'm wondering if that might be the case when it comes to WWE, if they say, okay, here's, you know, eight cities or something we keep in mind that we want to keep in a rotation, and that's going to be it?
I don't know, because cities keep building new stadiums, and I think they want to go to the new cool stadium. I know that here they want it. They would like it again in like 8 years.
Yeah,
is roughly the time frame that they would like it here, and they'll make a big bid for it again. I believe. I mean, you know, a lot can happen in 8 years, but that's kind of the impression I got. I mean, everybody was happy with it, but I do think that we're going to see. I mean, because we've seen a pattern, you know, with Phoenix, with Miami, with New Jersey. I mean, in the sense of, you know, they're going to cities that were that are Super Bowl cities, and you know they do the bragging thing that we outdrew the Super Bowl, even though actually in every case they did not, but they say they did.
Yeah, yeah, and then now obviously they're going to be going to Dallas next year, trying to get 100,000
right.
people, and then after that, it seems like whatever order it's in, they're going to go to Minnesota and back to Orlando. Probably.
Yeah, is Orlando like those are the cities that I've heard for those
yeah.
those following 2 years, but I don't know that anything's official.
Right, nothing's official. You know what, it's funny because I know that they're really big on Minnesota, and obviously so because of the new stadium, and there's somebody that works there in the city or in the stadium that used to work for WWE,
right.
And but you know what, I mean, they've talked about coming back to Orlando before, and basically they didn't like the Citrus Bowl, and they said the place is a dump. Once you get it fixed up, then we'll revisit it. And it's been fixed up. I mean, it's been renovated. So now it's definitely in play. And the Royal Rumble is going to be in Orlando next January. So I have this conspiracy theory that maybe the night after the Royal Rumble, they're going to announce that Orlando is actually getting, you know, WrestleMania 33.
I think that is very possible.
Yeah.
The only thing is the Minnesota.
I think Minnesota would get the following year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, yeah, you could very well be right. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Extreme Rules and what's going on in WWE right now. The biggest thing, and I know you talked about this in the latest newsletter, is the health of Daniel Bryan. And this is a strange situation because we don't know exactly what's wrong with him. I guess they just keep saying he's banged up. And so we don't know, was it a concussion that didn't get properly diagnosed, or was it something that dealt with a previous injury, especially the one that kept him sidelined for how long? What is going on with Daniel right now?
I wish I knew, because when you don't know, you start speculating, and the speculation is probably, you know, worse. I mean, the only thing I've heard, and again, and this isn't even official, you know, I mean, I've heard from two different people. One, you know, I mean, the one person who I know with the company, you know, said they thought he was going to be out for 5 weeks, but the official company stance is nothing, in the sense that he is still billed for Sunday's show against Barrett,
yeah.
You know, Bad News Barrett. So, and on TV, they gave themselves the caveat that he may not, I mean, they told you that he may not be there. They didn't tell you he wasn't going to be there. They didn't push the match at all, but they did mention it. And on SmackDown, he wasn't there for an interview. I don't know what's said on commentary on tonight's show, because, you know, usually it airs in Canada the night before, but because of the NHL playoffs, it hasn't. So I don't know how they address it tonight. I'm going with my impression that he's not wrestling on Sunday, but again, he is still advertised. But so yeah, if he is wrestling on Sunday, or they, you know, again, I don't think that they will have him do the Jey Uso thing, where they tell you he's fine and they injure him right away and he's not fine at all. But you know, they did just do that with Jey Uso, and it was only a couple weeks ago, so they could do that again. So there's a lot of different things that could happen. But, yeah, I mean, was it a concussion? Was it the neck injury? I mean, those are the two things. If it's a different injury, then it's not so concerning. If it's a new injury and he's out banged up and he needs a couple weeks' rest, you know, that's fine. If it's the neck, you know, obviously, you know, that's a very different issue. Then that's concerning. If he's only been back for a couple months and he's already – if he's hurting again, that's not good.
I'm wondering that no matter what kind of injury it is, especially if it's the neck thing more so, but even if it's something else, how much does WWE management look at this saying, well, this guy's so injury prone, obviously we want to use him when he's healthy, but I don't want to put him in the mix for the world championship because we can't trust his health? And can they even trust his health even for a secondary belt? Not that those mean that much, but you know, how does this affect them using him going forward? Because I think they have to be very leery if they think this guy is going to be banged up all the time.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that you got to know what the real what the injury is, because if it is an injury, that's I mean, guys are going to get hurt, but if it's part of a recurring pattern, yeah, then it becomes, you know, it becomes more explainable that they don't hook their wagon to him as much as many people would like them to. And I've even noticed with fans, you know, kind of going like with that same mentality. And again, depending on what the injury is, that's, you know, if he can't go full time, then they can't hook their wagon to him and make him the champion. And they're not going to anyway. I mean, I think that ship has sailed. I don't think they ever wanted to. It happened, you know, because of circumstances. But, you know, it's a weird, you know, the whole Daniel Bryan thing is a weird dynamic. It's wreaked havoc with their booking for the last 2 years, honestly,
yeah.
Because, you know, their goal was to make Batista the superstar, and that never even came close in 2014. And then this year was to build the whole thing around Roman Reigns and his ascension, and they had to delay that as well.
This might be a unique situation with him because of how, you know, hard that he even worked even before getting into WWE. But, you know, with Ring of Honor and with Japanese style, and we know how hard those guys can go that are there. Does WWE look at that a little bit differently when picking and choosing guys that they might want from there, considering the mileage that they might have on their bodies already, even at a younger age, as to whether or not they want to pick them up?
They always do. I mean, as far as like pre-existing injuries, I mean, obviously that was what happened with Nigel McGuinness, and he was never signed because of that. But yeah, I mean, you know, they give the guys full medicals, and I think that the issue with Kurt Angle was concerning in the sense, you know, Kurt came in with a broken neck, and Kurt did have a great career there, but it wasn't a long career there, and you know that, and it was one of those things where he had the, you know, I do think that you know, again, now more than ever. I do think that they evaluate, you know, they give those guys. That's why when we hear about these guys, you know, the first rumors of a guy like a Kevin Owens, just to throw out a name from recent, you know, we knew he was going, and it was months before, you know, they ever announced him, and you know, more time than that before he started, because, you know, they're not gonna issue a contract until they've thoroughly tested these guys out for all kinds of health and physical. You know, situations that could spring up.
Yeah, just a little sidetrack here. You mentioned Kurt Angle. Are you surprised he went as public as he did in speaking with Sports Illustrated, talking about it? Sounded like I really wanted to go back to WWE. I mean, he obviously did that with Jim Ross, but since he's re-signed with TNA, now that he did it again, saying, yeah, I really wanted to go back there, but they had no interest in even talking to me, and basically spilled the beans on what we already knew about why he's not back in WWE.
I was surprised because you know, some people, you know, I think some people think, I don't know how to explain, you know, just I don't think it makes him look good to say that.
Yeah.
And again, even though it's true, and maybe he's just being honest, and because it is what happened, but I just think that I was surprised. I thought that he would go with the tact of, you know, I was looking at both sides, and I love it here. You know what I mean? I mean,
right.
I mean, it's more positive to say, you know what? I mean, there's all these positive things about TNA. Maybe he just feels that he can't say that anymore because, you know, TNA's had so many problems, and it's kind of like people are going like, well, you know, like, why didn't you go there? You know, and especially at this stage of his career, and it was just like, well, they didn't want me, you know, which is the honest answer.
Sure.
But if I was him, I would, you know, when it comes to that question, I would just say that TNA made me a better offer, or just say that I love TNA. I owe my career to TNA. My career was almost done nine years ago, and look at, you know, what they've done, and they made me another great offer, and they understand that I can only work a certain number of dates a year because of my age and health, and they work with me, and I love them, and WWE's fine, but it's not for everybody. I mean, that's what I would have said in his situation,
right.
but you know, I mean, give him credit for being honest, I guess. I never want to knock anyone for being honest.
Yeah, there's just some guys at TNA, it seems like they're honest almost to a fault when it comes to how the company is perceived. And I say from this standpoint, like, Kurt said that, and it made it sound like he really wanted to go to WWE. You know, how do you got to feel if you're TNA about that? I mean, you understand the guy's being honest, but at the same time, you see that. Or even like Taz, when he was working there, I mean, he openly, you know, talked about WWE all the time on his podcast and on Twitter and everything. And it's like, you're supposed to be one of our company guys, and you're talking about the competition, or you're talking about another company so much that can we rein that in a little bit? And nobody's worried, and it doesn't seem like TNA's worried about that either. They don't care.
You know, TNA wanted to be competition, but I think nobody entertains that they are.
Right, they're not.
And so that may be it. But, I mean, when WCW was going down, I remember the exact same thing, and you probably do too. I mean, I would talk to guys, and I mean, when we did the daily radio show, and the guys were just, you know, and again, they were knocking the company a lot more than the TNA guys knocked their own company. But, you know, this was a period when the competition was a lot closer than it is now, and they're, you know, you still got this idea that, you know, there's just, yeah, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of frustration when you're number two, and, you know, and you're not growing, and you know that you're actually on the way down. I think that that's probably it too. And you kind of like, I mean, how much when you're equal or you're enthusiastic or you're on the way up, you know, you can kind of go, you know, we're a movement, and, you know, slowly but surely type of thing. And like now, you can't really convince anyone of it, and you can't really convince yourself to say it, and so you start talking in a different way.
I'll get back to Extreme Rules in a minute. Since we're talking about TNA, let's talk a little bit more about that. I know people have been, for years this has been going on, where people are like, oh, they're in trouble again, they're in trouble, you know, how much longer are they going to last? I'm kind of that mindset of, they've been through this, it's a speed bump at this point. I'm not saying that things are pretty there, but I don't know if anything really is imminent. Where do you feel TNA is right now, and what is the relationship like with Destination America, considering that's supposed to be such a big deal with them, partnering with them and with Discovery?
Deal because, you know, when they first came in, everybody was so enthusiastic, and they had all this programming all over the thing, and then now they've cut back on programming, and maybe part of that was by design, in the sense that they wanted it all over the place. But, you know, if you have so much of it on the air, you know, maybe you are diluting the number, and the key number is the Friday night number. You know, if you have too many replays, and also you just want to put the stuff like all over, to, you know, kind of, you know, get the word out that you're the new TNA station, and they are, you know, strong programming on that station, but there, yeah, there's other issues too. You know, it's a tough time for TNA. There's just no way around it. I mean, as far as like, you know, what's going to happen? They've been through, you know, it's been tough. It's been tough for them for years and years. But losing Spike was the biggest blow in the history of that company. Getting Spike was the greatest thing. It saved the company. They were on the way done. They were very close to done when the Spike deal came. I mean, it was very fortunate for them. I just don't, you know, they had pulled themselves off of Fox Sports Net because they were paying and they couldn't afford to pay or didn't want to pay anymore. So essentially they were off television completely, and it was just about done. And then Spike came, and Spike was the savior. And they had, you know, and at points on Spike, they were very successful. I mean, I would say they were successful. They were doing okay. They kept wanting to go bigger. You know, they had problems trying to go bigger. There's all kinds of differences over the years of what exactly they should be. But the loss of Spike was the killer, and that was last year. And, you know, they will never be at the level that they were, just because with the exposure, with, you know, as long as, and then this is a long-term contract. So, you know, they're going to be there. They have a budget. I think that they can survive for, you know, until the next contract. And then when that happens, then, you know, both sides, you know, will have, you know, they'll be able to shop elsewhere. I mean, my feeling is that the fact that they landed there with so, you know, such less penetration tells me that the CMTs of the world weren't that interested, you know, because if they were, you know, a Spike to CMT, and I know they talk to CMT, a Spike to CMT move is not necessarily like a big downward move, whereas a Spike to Destination America is a huge downward move.
And I don't wish any ill will against them. And I mean, I want TNA to do well. I want the talent to be able to have a place to work and everything. But at what point, especially with everything that they've gone through so many years, and it's been such an uphill battle to do what they want to do, and we see all these issues from the outside looking in, but what point do you get to there you say, is it really worth the effort? I mean, why do we keep going just to try to stay afloat if it's bad business at some point?
Yeah. because I don't know the books,
right?
It's hard for me to give a great answer for that. You know, it is a struggle. It's a tough struggle. I think that there's a feeling of you don't want to quit your business. You've got a lot of people relying on it. They're obviously going to go until they can't go. I think that we've seen that, because if they were going to quit, they could have quit. You know,
yeah,
they could have quit 10 years ago because they were losing a lot. They were probably losing a lot more money years ago than they're losing now. So, from 2005 until, you know, whatever, 2012, I would say, from that period, there was always that hope. Even when things were bad, there was always that hope. But I think that when the Hogan move didn't work, that was a tough one, because it's kind of like there's no more rabbits to pull out of the hat when you get Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, and Jeff Hardy and Rob Van Dam all at once. And, you know, you move, but you don't move that much. They brought in Kurt, and that was a huge deal at the time. They brought in Sting, which was a deal at the time. Christian was supposed to be a big deal, really didn't mean much of anything. So you've always had this thing of, if we bring in Mick Foley was another one.
What kind of impact do you think it would have been if they were able to land Jim Ross and or Paul Heyman?
Well, if Jim Ross and Paul Heyman, Jim Ross as an announcer, would be like the rest of them. If it was Jim Ross and Paul Heyman running the company, and they're on Spike, yeah, I think that would have been different. I think it would have been. It still was going to be really, really tough. But I do have an idea where Paul Heyman was going to go, and he was going to go in a completely different direction than what they were doing. And so when you're in that completely different direction of what they're doing, I mean, it could have done a lot worse, and it could have done a lot better. But it would have been different, and I think that was what they needed. But they couldn't put that deal together, I always thought it was a long shot to do it, because Heyman wanted a lot for the thing, but I do think it was, in the situation they were in at the time they were negotiating with him, I think that it was a deal that they really should have tried to make. You know, you're rolling the dice. You know, Paul, you know.
What did he want to do creatively?
He wanted to redo the whole thing. I mean, you know, his thing was going to build the whole thing around Bryan Danielson, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And Kurt Angle. And, you can't redo ECW. It was not going to be ECW. It was not going to be anything that Paul had ever done before. It was going to be a new vision of pro wrestling. It was going to be a serious sports-like vision of pro wrestling without, and again, I don't know if that's the right thing, because, you know, we've got an audience, again, the audience now, it's not a, you know, it's so different from the 80s. The 80s, you had an audience that watched all kinds of different versions of pro wrestling and was willing to watch all kinds. And now we have an audience that's essentially grown up on WWE, and that is pro wrestling. And if you're not WWE, you must be minor league. And it's harder to accept anything else, even when it is good. So that's a big struggle. In the 90s, WWE wasn't that good. So when Paul came along in, you know, 93, 95, WCW sucked and WWE wasn't very good. And so there was a place for ECW. And ECW even could have been bigger if it had exposure when it was hotter and before they lost their talent and when it was fresher. It was also limited in other ways. Because it was so extreme that it wasn't going to be mainstream. And his thing this time was not to do that. And he couldn't anyway. You couldn't, you know, the concussion issue is different. The blood issue is different. You can't do what ECW was. I mean, there are people who still do it on a small degree on the indie scene, but they you know, it's not like they've ever taken off either.
Right.
So, like I said, anybody competing with WWE and UFC, it's so, so, so hard. You know, it's like we can sit here and go, well, you know, there's things you can do, but there's so much of an audience that watches this stuff that only wants to watch the major league. It'd be like, you know, look, we've seen the same thing with football, people competing with the NFL and trying all these new things. And at the end of the day, you know, you look at it and go, look how many football fans there are. I mean, there's a lot more football fans than there are wrestling fans or MMA fans, you know, by leaps and bounds. And Vince McMahon and others that have gone, oh, you know, we'll go in the off season and give them football when they're, you know, and it didn't work at all. Or we'll go during football season and we'll do lower prices, or we'll do this or we'll do that, or, you know, we'll do a different time zone, you know, time frame or whatever. Because all these football fans, if we only get 10% of the NFL fans, you know, we'll be doing great. Well, you don't. Football fans want to watch the NFL or in college. It's just how it is. They don't want a new football league. They don't support them. And I think that's the big problem that wrestling has right now is, you know, that the people won't. The death of WCW to this day, you know, it's 14 years ago, it affects the business. It was the worst thing that ever happened to pro wrestling, because you had an audience that went away, and that was the audience that was willing to accept something different. Now you've got an audience that only knows one thing, and you've had 14 straight years of it.
And the weird thing is, too, especially over the last year, we've seen so many different wrestling companies pop up or already still be there, because now you've got TNA, you've got Lucha Underground, New Japan, even though it's taped shows. You've got all this going on, but we all know that it is WWE, and that is the brand, that is the standard. It seems like there's so much more interest in it from a variety of different places in trying to have that programming, but when it comes down to it, it's all about one big company.
Yeah. I mean, none of them have the great level of exposure, but still, you know, like the New Japan stuff is in 44 million homes, and the Lucha Underground, you know, it's not in a lot of homes. I mean, that's a weak station. It's in a lot of Hispanic homes, but it's not knocking them dead with Hispanic viewers either. And, you know, Lucha Underground, I mean, there's things about Lucha Underground that I don't like. Having said that, Lucha Underground's a very entertaining one-hour show every week, and probably better than Raw and SmackDown. And New Japan, as far as wrestling goes, you know, is much better than Raw and SmackDown. TNA's been better, you know, TNA's been better than Raw and SmackDown the last couple months, for that matter. TNA's been a good show. But I think one of the things that's kind of frustrating to me is the TNA, finally, those UK tapings were very good, especially the London one. The second London show was a great television show. And this last Friday's TNA show was, I wouldn't say a great show, but it was a very good show. But nobody talks about it anymore. And I just kind of wish that, like, God, I wish that they had 3 years ago, you know, made this idea. The two things I wish they would have done with hindsight was kind of figure, you know, this kind of booking 3 years ago when they were still on Spike as number one and number two, that they would have really embraced the UK more and done more tapings out of the UK when they had money to do them. Because I just feel that, like, those UK shows make them look so live and major league, but you know, in a way that nobody's tapings look, you know, unless they're in the UK themselves. I think that they could have embraced being the UK product, because I think the UK wants its own wrestling. The WWE will always be number one there as well, but I think that there's an opening for somebody who embraces the UK, and TNA is very well received in the UK. It's not like here where, you know, again, there's that they're not WWE. When in the UK, I mean, you could see those people are very willing to accept TNA as the other group a lot more than here.
Absolutely. You know, being on Friday nights does not help TNA one bit either.
No, I agree. I think that's Destination America.
Right.
Destination America thought that, well, you know, all these, you know, 3 million viewers, 2.5 million viewers every Friday night are used to watching wrestling, and they're not going to be able to get it anymore because, you know, SmackDown moved to Thursday. So that makes it the perfect night. I disagreed with that, but that was their move. But I don't know that, like, if they'd stayed on Wednesday, you know, I mean, Thursday would have been suicidal against SmackDown, but I don't know that they'd stayed on Wednesday that they would be doing any better. I think it's just the lack of penetration either way. But I do think that Friday and Saturday right now, if I was doing wrestling, those would be the two nights that I would avoid. Friday, people want to go out. And Saturday, you know, the audience wants to watch. You know, there's such a big real sports audience, and there's so much competition there. And there's UFCs every Saturday night. Not that UFC is direct competition, but there's boxing. There's just so much on Saturday nights that it's just not a good night for pro wrestling in my mind.
What's the bigger hindrance when it comes to TNA using other talent? Is it the money, or is it the belief that if you go there, it's going to be that much harder to ever go into WWE?
You mean as far as not being able to get a lot of the indie talent?
Yeah, because, I mean, I wonder about that too, because I mean, how many guys have we seen really go from TNA to WWE? And I think there's a lot of people that believe, and I think there's a reason behind
Joe's going, but that just like the only one, right?
Right. I mean, there's I truly believe that there is a thing that say, hey, I got to avoid TNA because if I go there, I don't think TNA is really going to look at me.
WWE, I have certainly heard that. It does weigh in people's minds. There's a lot of guys who, you know, again, Ring of Honor guys who would stay in Ring of Honor thinking that they can go from Ring of Honor to WWE, but if they've been on TNA television, that it won't be as beneficial, where the TNA television hurts you. It is something that pops up, yeah.
Let's get back to Extreme Rules a little bit. And I've wondered about this. Because, I mean, so it's been a little while since we've ever seen, not a total reset, but WWE really go in different directions or have a different feel after WrestleMania. There's a lot of very much of a continuation following WrestleMania and the way they put the cards together. And I almost wonder now, too, because of the WWE Network and the way their business model is, with them not, you know, relying so much on pay-per-view, would this be the main event of a show following WrestleMania if they still had that pay-per-view model?
I think so. This, as far as Orton and Rollins, I think so. Would there be a different mentality towards pay-per-view or these big show these shows if they still had the pay-per-view? Yes. Anytime you change the dynamic, it isn't as incumbent, and financially, you're not taking. If you do a really bad pay-per-view show, you take a big hit. The network number varies, and you know, again, at the $10 price point, the people who want to see, and it's not like they're going, is this worth $60 to me or not? It's $10, so you don't need to give them as good a show, and hype the show as good. And when you don't need to, you're not as motivated to. So it does affect it. But as far as Orton versus Rollins as the main event, I think they would have. Would have gone with that anyway. I don't think that they would be, because the ones that you were you know, the ones where you would be scared would be with trying to headline with an unproven guy,
mm-hmm.
and they actually haven't done a lot of that.
And I'm surprised they haven't done that.
The one that I'm surprised at, especially now that we've seen the whole year schedule, is they won't break from that mentality. It's like, I have no idea why they don't do some shows outside the United States now. Because before, you know, there was a reason. You know, you can't move that pay-per-view time slot because people are creatures of habit. And you know, you move it from that time slot, you're going to lose buys. But when you have the network and you can replay it and it's video on demand and you can watch it at your convenience, that time slot, you know, doing it a couple of hours earlier in the day, it's not as big of a deal. I don't know. I even thought that they should have done a B-show in Europe, because I thought that doing a B show in Europe, you would pick up so many more European buys just on the novelty of a European show that it would offset the buys you would lose in the United States by being off time. You know, again, because, you know, there was, you know, with a pay-per-view, there were months where it was like a 50-50 split, and even more than 50-50 where more buys came outside the United States and outside North America than inside, with so many of those coming from Europe. So, you know, and the Europeans, you know, that would buy the pay-per-views, you know, you're talking about a 2 a.m. buy, so that's very inconvenient for them. If you moved it to prime time in Europe, and yeah, that's early in the afternoon in the United States for a B show, once a year, I think you would have made more money. But now, I just think to cultivate that European market, they're a worldwide company. They're not a United States company. And England is their number two market, not Canada, not anywhere else. And I just think that, you know, again, I think that they could do, if they did one pay-per-view a year, and I would make it one of the, you know, maybe a Survivor Series or something like that, but, you know, do one pay-per-view a year in the UK, and yeah, you're, you know, with the network, I think that you would, you know, boost interest in the product as a whole there, you would pacify those fans there, you would increase network subscribers there, and I don't think it would hurt in the United States at all.
And I'm really starting to get the feeling, too, when it comes to the network, that what they're using as a driver for subscriptions, it's not the tape library, and it's not even as much as the quote-unquote pay-per-views now. It's more of the new programming that they're doing.
We'll find out. I mean, yeah, they're really gearing up for that, and they're spending a lot of money. They shocked me with the amount of money that they're devoting to the network this year, because where they are right now, they were in a position where, it still wasn't where it needed to be to get to where they once were, but it wasn't that far off either. But now that they're spending, you know, $40 million more on the network, you know, with all these new programs, you know, that's 400,000 more subscribers that you need every month, or whatever the number is, something like that. It's rolling the dice. But, you know, again, if they hit big with the network, and they seem to believe they will, they're going to be in better shape than they've ever been before. And in the end, I think they will be. You know, 5 years from now, I think this network will be a big success, because, you know, even if this thing that they're trying now doesn't work, they'll learn from it. Every one of these things is a learning experience for them. And they're going to figure out the model that, you know, if people want those, you know, Jerry Springer shows, then they'll give them. If they don't, they'll learn, and they won't do them anymore, and they'll save money on not doing them. If, you know, whatever people want, if they want more live shows, again, next year, you know, and I don't know that they're doing it. No one said anything. Next year, I think that Friday night NXT show, that absolutely should be a network special. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And it sure sounds like, too, when it comes to the network, like there's going to be more, you know, PG-13 programming as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a part of them where they think that they've lost that audience. They want to get... that audience, but not putting it on regular television so they don't offend their sponsors, so they'll put it on the network. It's probably worth the experiment. Again, like the new stuff, like these new shows, I don't have a feel for whether, the shows aren't even on now. I don't have a feel whether they're going to make a difference or not. But we'll all learn. You know, if they do, I wouldn't have done it as far as the new things. I would have done, you're right. They're not that hot on the old programming. I would have done the old programming so different. I have no idea why they didn't, but they didn't. You know, I would have released one episode of like six or seven different libraries, you know, the good ones, the Mid-South, the World Class, the AWA, old WWE, going back from the beginning of the net, you know, time, weekly episodic in a time slot, you know,
chronological order, yeah.
At 8 p.m. or maybe Monday night at 11, one of them, and you can watch the shows weekly the way they were viewed by the fans 30 years ago, because again, just throwing out an episode, you know, in the middle of nowhere or 50 episodes which all get lost, I don't think that that's really, as good, because wrestling is meant to be a soap opera. It's not meant to be, you know, it's like throwing out an episode of Guiding Light. And then, you know, another one that has nothing to do with it. It's like, somebody who was actually a wrestler, you know, brought up to me when I brought the same thing up and said, you know, maybe they don't want to do it because it exposes how bad their booking is now, because some of those shows, you know, from a week-to-week standpoint and a logic standpoint, really are far superior to the stuff now. But at least you
get people wanting to buy the network to watch that stuff.
Plus, like, yeah, some of the older fans, if it's WCW Saturday night that they remember growing up on, and they can see one new episode a week, and it's on Saturday afternoon, and they know they're going to see it, you know, and you advertise who's on it, I think that there's, you know, a lure that, you know, obviously they don't, because to me I expected that when they announced the network. I figured, like, what would I do? And that's what I would do. But they have really not done much. I mean, they have a lot of old footage up there. They got thousands of hours, but just thrown out there with no rhyme or reason. You know, they throw out like a year's worth of Nitros, and again, they're really focused on 98 to 2001, and I get why they are, because it's not so far back. That 80 stuff is so far back for most people, but it's also, it's also like a learning experience for your younger fans who really want to learn the business. There's something to that. And the Monday Night Wars, obviously, here is they think that's the only one that matters and counts, and they've done a ton on that, and so that is there.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to this show on Sunday, I think everybody expects Rollins to leave with the title. But what's next? I mean, I I get this sense
I think Roman now.
I would think so, but I kind of get the sense, like, obviously to me the big goal is let's get to SummerSlam, let's get to a match with Brock. So can they do something with Roman now, or do they have to kind of extend this with Orton another month?
They could extend with Orton another month. Again, with the network, I would be less worried about it than with pay-per-view. Because with pay-per-view, if Orton and Rollins, let's just say it didn't draw, I'll tell you what, with the Mayweather fight, I actually think that this show probably would have bombed on pay-per-view, like bad. But it doesn't matter as a $10 network buy. But I think, like, to me, I don't want, if Roman Reigns is your guy that you're grooming to be the guy for 5 years, I don't want him to be the guy who gets a bunch of title shots and fails 4, 5, 6, 7 times, finally wins. I wish he would have won the first time. Now, circumstances did not allow him to win the first time, which was their own fault. They didn't bring Daniel Bryan back. None of this would have ever happened. And the minute, again, I just didn't think you had to be that smart to not figure that out. And that's when I'm really disappointed in them in that one, because it forced their hand to abandon their plan and not give Roman Reigns that big moment. And if, do you want to see Roman Reigns challenge on a bunch of big shows, fail, and then next year's WrestleMania, hey, Roman Reigns is challenging for the title after you've seen it? I say no. But Roman Reigns pins Seth Rollins on TV tonight in the main event on SmackDown. And to me, that tells me that that's not for WrestleMania. That's probably for next month's pay-per-view or the month after. And will he win it? Probably not, because when I look at the real big match for SummerSlam, to me is Rollins and Brock.
I agree, and I don't want to see that be a three-way either.
I don't think it should be a three-way. That we already had the three-way at WrestleMania,
right?
In its own weird way.
It's going to be a tricky thing because they've gotten Roman back. Not that he was ever that lost, but they've gotten crowd reaction back in some areas where they were turning on him, obviously. But do you really want to throw him in there against Rollins right now if he's not going to be the guy that walks away with the title?
Plus, do you want him to even win the title unless it's on a big show?
Right. I would wait.
Because that was the whole thing with WrestleMania and why they held it off, was because you want that reaction on the show that everyone talks about, and then you want him going on the Today Show, and that's how you kick off the reign. It was really... everything was done well, except once they brought Daniel Bryan back, it's just like they misread the landscape. And, again, I hate going back to that, but it's like we already saw the landscape a year before, so the misreading of it is just, it was bad. It was bad. The year before when they misread it, it was just kind of like, well, it's a learning experience. But it's like the next year when you do the exact same thing, it's like, what, did you pay no attention last year?
Right. And the other thing is, too, when we talk about, what can they do different or an influx of talent and whatnot, it's so tricky with them now to bring in NXT talent, because we can sit there and say so many different guys already, but with the way that they're using NXT as its own brand and now starting to tour with them more often, I don't know exactly how they're going to do that, because they've got to keep star power on that brand, but at the same time, they want to have an influx of talent on the main roster.
Yeah, well, they do it slowly. Again, it's like NXT has whatever. If you really look at NXT, and what is making it cool, you've got Finn Balor, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks, and then there's a couple others to a lesser degree that are kind of getting in there. The Enzos and all those guys, and they're fine to have there. And I don't know if anyone's clamoring for them to be on the main roster this week anyway. But if you take they just put Neville up and they just brought the Lucha Dragons up. But if you bring Finn Balor up, say in 3 months, that's not going to hurt, because then you can, find there are guys out there that you're going to recruit that are good, that will take their spot. And I think as long as you have Sami Zayn and Owens. Now, the thing is how long do you keep Sami Zayn and Owens there? Because I think, if you can bring in 2 or 3 new guys and then bring them up, it's a weird thing, because before it was just the whole thought process is, when can we when how can we fit them in right? Now there's the other thought process. If we take too many of them, what are we going to do about NXT touring? Because if we took those five people, and every one of them belongs on the main roster, you know, the big five that I mentioned, and you put them all on the main roster, and it'll help the main roster, but I think that part of it is like if we bring so many guys in at once, they may not get over because they're all being brought in at once, so you want to bring them in slowly. So there's that. But let's just say a year from now, all five of them really should. It'd be really a shame in a sense that if Kevin Owens is still in NXT in 1 year,
right?
For his career, he's not a young guy anymore. Charlotte's not that young anymore. You know what I mean? This is their big period where they could earn a lot of money, and they're not going to earn a lot of money in NXT.
Well, how old's Finn? Finn's what? Early 30s?
Finn's in his early 30s, right?
Yeah.
And Tommy's like 34, right?
Yeah. So, I mean...
Yeah, these are not young guys.
And see, the thing is, too, that I wonder if we're ever going to see a situation where they sign somebody and they can immediately put them on the main roster. I think it's going to be tough just because of the precedent that they've set now. There's always special situations.
Okay, well, then the question... So do you think that they put Joe in NXT? And
yes.
Joe is what, 30...
Seven.
Joe's 37?
36, 37.
36, 37. Yeah, I knew he was past 35.
Yeah. I do. I think he goes to NXT. Because I think
there's nothing wrong with him going to NXT for a couple months, but
right.
If he spends a year in NXT, I mean, you know, if you're late 30s, you know, look at the guys that are like 38 that are in pro wrestling that have been in pro wrestling for 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, they're hurting. They're hurting guys.
Right.
You don't want to debut them on the main. Like, if you debut them on the main roster when they can still do everything in the world, like Neville, then it's cool. But if you get them to where, you know, like Finn Balor's the perfect example, okay? I mean, Finn's getting older, and if you wait, say, 2 years, Finn between 2 years older and 2 years more bumps, you know, he will be a better technical wrestler and he will be a smarter performer, but he will be less spectacular.
Right.
And what's going to get these guys over at first, the world is filled with guys who are technically sound wrestlers. What's going to get the smaller guys over is spectacular. And so if you have him, you know, where he's not, and he's not, even now, he's not the same guy that he was 3 years ago in Japan.
No.
He's still great. I mean, he's absolutely great, but he's not the same guy.
Right.
And in each year... As he grows in one aspect, he will diminish in the other. And when you're talking about a guy like Joe, I mean, it's going to be even more. So how long, you know, do you, you know, wait, you know, they don't make big money and you don't make big money with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And I also think there's something to, you know, having a guy there that, you know, even if he's wrestled around the world or been wherever else before he's come to WWE or NXT, there is something to that fresh, cool factor. And how long can you keep him on NXT without bringing him up where they're not as cool or as fresh as they once were? Not that everybody in WWE in their audience is watching NXT, but I think there is a little bit something to that. And when it comes to Joe, you know, WWE will look at it like, okay, for the people that know him, cool. But if people that don't, you know, look at the reaction he's going to get when he comes in here. He's going to be treated like a superstar. He can go to NXT. It's just how long until they can bring him up, because to me, anything past probably 6 or 7 months at that point, it's probably too long.
It works against him at
yeah.
that point. Yes, yes. I don't think Joe should be one of those guys that they build the NXT brand around, even though I think that, you know, the thing with the NXT audience is that that audience is so much more hardcore and so much smarter about wrestling than, you know, that few hundred people there than the 10,000 audience that they'll get on a Monday night show.
Right.
So, you know, you have Hideo Itami walk in and they know he's a superstar. Joe's going to walk in and be a god. If Joe walked into a Raw show, I think he would get a good reaction, but you would have, you know, 60% of those fans would vaguely know him or not know him at all, and the other ones would think, oh, it's pretty cool, it's Samoa Joe. But and then 15% will think he's a god, right?
Right.
He won't walk in, and it's not going to be like Sting when Sting walked in.
Right.
But
I mean,
in the NXT arena, when Joe walks in the first time, it will be.
Yeah, I mean, he's got more notoriety and is more popular than somebody, say, like an Adam Rose or an Emma, but we can sit here and say we watch NXT and we saw how popular they were for the sample size that they had there, but then when they got put on Raw, people were like, who is this person? I don't know who they are, because not everybody is watching NXT. I mean, it's a low percentage of that audience that's watching Raw or at Raw that is watching NXT on a week-to-week basis and keeps up with everybody there.
Right, 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 right. To me, when these guys come up, and they know it, that you have to introduce them from scratch, and one of the things is they'll see a thing in NXT that, and also, again, you know, we've also seen what works in the NXT arena doesn't necessarily work on Raw, and Adam Rose and Emma, you know, I watched them on NXT, I watched both of them, and I thought, you know, hey, there's something there, and the people go crazy for the ring entrance and all this, and then they did the same thing on Raw, and I mean, immediately, it's just kind of like, they need the backstory, or it's, again, one of those things that works, you know, they're small building wrestlers, and there's big building wrestlers. And you don't know which is going to be what until you do it. I mean, you can kind of like, you know, you can have an idea, but sometimes it's just so many different variables and timing and things like that. I mean, it's like Enzo. I mean, Enzo could walk in. Enzo's got so much charisma, right?
Right.
He could walk in and you know, do that. But the first week he does that promo, you know, the people aren't going to be chanting it. Now, you know, after 6 months, will they be? Or will they just give up on him? And will they start beating him because he's small and not, you know, not physically impressive compared to the other guys? I have no idea.
Yeah, I wonder about him, but when it comes to size with some of these people, it's funny because, okay, so Finn's a smaller guy, but just has enormous amounts of charisma and is an incredible wrestler. So I'm not really too worried about him. But somebody like an Enzo or somebody like a Tyler Breeze, who I think has got, you know, when you look at the entire package of his act and everything, I think is extremely good. But when you look at the size and how that equates on the main roster, you wonder, how's he going to fit in there or how can he be used? You know,
I think Tyler Breeze could be like a Santino Marella heel and then turn babyface. Easy, right? That level. But that's not really that great a level. I mean, it's a job and it's he'll be known. But yet, can he be Seth Rollins? You know what I mean? And I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a great act, but I don't know if they'll open their eyes to him being a main eventer. And again, you don't know if the public will either.
Right.
The public is a lot more open to different sizes than they've ever been. It's not as big a deal. I think it's really actually a pretty small deal now because there are so many, you know, both. There's so many smaller guys that are up that are doing well that never would have in the 80s. And on the flip side, there's a lot of big guys that probably would have done real well in the 80s. You know, I mean, we had, you know, Barbarian, and nothing against him, but, you know, Barbarian was kind of like a, you know, colorless but huge guy. I think a colorless but huge guy today gets nowhere. You've got to have some color.
Well, look at that. It's interesting you say that because I know that they want to look at everybody from all shapes and sizes from every kind of walk of life when they bring in guys, you know, to the performance center to train. That's why I found it interesting that Thomas Kingdon was one of the guys because he's a guy that admitted, I didn't watch wrestling growing up. I've watched very little of it now. Somebody saw me, you know, from WWE, scouted me. I've been a bodybuilder and said, I think you could do this in wrestling. And he went and tried out and they brought him in.
Yeah, and I heard that when they tried him out, he was, you know, it wasn't like he was a duck to water to it either. Yeah,
he's just a big guy.
But you know, I mean, there's always that thing where that physical look.
Yeah,
and there's something to it, but the bodybuilder thing. I mean, like a 6'3" bodybuilder, if they could talk and if they couldn't wrestle a lick. Could do very well in wrestling in another era because there's examples of it. I mean, Jesse Ventura, you know what I mean, who was 6'2.5", Superstar was 6'4", and they were never wizards in the ring by any means, and they were incredibly successful characters. I don't think that those guys, there's so much more of an emphasis on being able to work now. I don't know that those guys, that this fan base would, you know.
It's going to be tough.
I mean, look, they do the You Can't Wrestle at Ethan Carter III, and look how much better he is, you know, as far as things that he can do.
Right. I'm still surprised that WWE, how did they not see the talent there? I know he's developed even more since then, but that guy's got a ton of talent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's going to be misses. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I watch Lucha Underground, I see Brian Cage. Although, Brian Cage is still missing something. He's absolutely great at what he can do with his musculature and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, you think that, you know, Ethan Carter III was in their system for years, and, you know, between the look and the promos and everything, you know, he's a real guy. He's one of the guys, you know, that the TNA's homegrown, that if they had more of a buzz, I think that, and just the buzz that allowed them to make a star, he would be a big star. Him and Spud both. I wasn't necessarily sold on Spud at first, but there's something about Spud that, you know, and again, you know, there's something about him as a character that's very endearing.
Last thing before I let you go, I got to bring this up. What is going on with Steve Austin in WWE? Because I know he says nothing is going on, and he did his podcast and said everything is fine. If there's another business opportunity for me in WWE, that's fine. We will do that. But there are definitely some signs there that point that things are not that fine. And then I look at this, too, at his podcasts, both the family-friendly version and the other version, and he has not had a WWE guest on in, it's at least 3 months, I think.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of signs there. He wasn't at WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it wasn't an offer. He and I talked a couple of weeks ago. It's kind of when all this came down. And, you know, he didn't seem like he thought that there was any real heat there. I mean, he did turn down, because of a timing issue, the Tough Enough thing. But he said he wanted to do it. It's just that he'd already made commitments to CMT to do Broken Skull Challenge in June, and once he did that, he couldn't do – their timing was also June. And that was really the only thing. But, you know, the replacing him with Jericho on those podcasts, I mean, there is – I mean, obviously there is something.
And it seems like it's all from one side. It's not from both sides. It's just from one side.
Well, it could be. I mean, for whatever reason. But, you know, again, with all, you know, those Austin podcasts got with Triple H and Vince got so much interest. And to replace him with Jericho, you know, I mean, and obviously, and Jericho's had their guys on all the time. You know, it's just interesting who they give guests, because, again, yeah, Austin doesn't have guests. Jim Ross doesn't have guests. Jericho gets guests all the time. Jericho is still with the company. I mean, he comes back and wrestles from time to time. But Austin is still affiliated with the company in certain ways, and was certainly asked to do Tough Enough, and he's a legendary personality and this and that. You know, there's obviously something. I mean, you know, they wouldn't have replaced him if there wasn't something.
The whole Cena doing the stunner thing is weird.
Cena doing the stunner wasn't going to happen. If, you know, that's another telling sign. But as far as what it is, from his perspective, he doesn't think it's that bad. And again, he's been through he's been through how many years with Vince McMahon? I think he came in 96-ish.
Yeah, so 20 years.
So 20 years with Vince. They've had a lot worse splits. So, you know, from his perspective, it might be, it's Vince. You know, maybe he's mad now. 6 months from now, he's not going to be mad. And so why make a big deal out of it? I already know the track record. I already know, you know, that's how I would kind of read it. It's like, yeah, okay. You know the same thing. It's like sometimes people get mad at you, and it's kind of like you just go, you know what, in 3 months, you're not going to be mad at me, so don't get stressed over, type of thing.
Exactly. So, well, Dave, I really appreciate the time you coming on the podcast. Everybody can go over to f4wonline.com, and they can see all the work that you and Brian Alvarez do over there, and you can subscribe to the Figure Four newsletter as well, get all the podcasts that you guys do. And everybody can follow you online as well at Twitter. It's at Dave Meltzer, WON. So, Dave, looking forward to you coming to WrestleMania in Orlando when it's here so we can hang out again. Or the next time it's in the Bay Area, I'll see you. But sooner or later, I'm sure we'll connect between now and the next 5 years, right?
Well, we probably will, probably SummerSlam or something like that, like we did last year.
It's probably something like that, yeah. And I'm definitely hoping to go there again, and hopefully you can make it out there as well, too.
Okay, good. It's great. By the way, it was great seeing you.
Great seeing you too.
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Man, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.